This is the one with Shane Ward's greatest hits.
A Kinder Egg that sounds like a triple.
A council man in a council van.
Demonic Crayola dad.
And looking forward to the 2012 Olympics.
It's called Fear Her.
Here we go!
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who back when?
Hello everybody and welcome to an episode of Who Back When in 025 Fear Her. To my right,
I'm Nicol Lely.
And to his right,
I'm Ponkin.
And who are you, Drew? Who are you?
Don't tell him, Pike. I am Drew, as revealed by Nick, just giving away there for free.
Yes, today we are reviewing N025 Fear Her, and can I just start off right off the bat with a correction of something that I said in a prior recording. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember which one it was. I think it may have been Love and Monsters. So yeah, the last New Who review that you will have heard, in which I said that according to some Doctor Who ratings guides, Love and Monsters was the lowest rated New Who episode ever. Turns out I was wrong. I looked this up on TARDIS Wikia today, and this is the lowest rated episode.
Well, we'll see about that, listeners.
No, I looked it up on IMDb. I found the same. This was lowest.
Oh, wow.
Of all the New Who. With Love and Monsters second lowest.
All right, there we go.
We materialise in near-future East London in 2012, just in time for this year's Olympiad.
Doctor and Rose soon find that children are inexplicably going missing from Dame Kelly Holmes' close.
The detective agency of Doc and Rose are on the case, with a nudge and a wink and a say no more.
Drawing a conclusion that a lonely little girl might just be their man.
Bingo bongo, you are welcome.
As the bite-sized chunk of Who explained, we will materialise in near-future East London, which is always fantastic to look back at. Always. I always love when they do a near-future one, because quickly out of date, and then we get to look back at
it's
what...
It's the Demolition Man effect.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so wonderful. Horrific, near-apocalyptic future of 1996.
My favourite one of this is... my favourite film of all time, or one of them at the very least, is the Transformers movie from 1986, the animated one. Got Orson Welles in it and Leonard Nimoy and loads of cool things. But they've got the Star Wars opening with the text.
The crawl?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess every movie did in the 80s at some point. But the opening line is, the year 2005. Like, maniacal, mega. It's like 2005. And it just gets funnier every time you watch it. It's amazing.
That does sound hilarious.
Yeah. 2005. We're still launching wars for oil. We haven't moved past that yet.
Yeah. We just call it Energon now. Anyway, this is a Doctor Who podcast.
Oh, I have a question.
Yes. Go for it.
Which is that this is set in 2012.
Yes.
Do you think, therefore, that it's deliberate that they put this episode as Series 2, Episode 12?
Ooh.
No, there are no way that... Like, if they can't sort out the syncing for the opening, opening credits for their music and the TARDIS...
I forgot to check. I don't know. It may be synced up at this point.
I'm going to assume that they can get their shit together for this. So, yes, they're all excited. Doc and Rose have materialised, and they're all excited to watch the Olympics.
Yeah, or they would be if their close weren't tinged with tragedy.
We've started in the wrong place, guys.
Yeah, you're right. We've got a cold open.
Yes, we do.
Let's run through that. Children playing outside. Old lady walks past.
Our creepy, prophetic old lady.
I was going to say, yes.
Like, the Oracle of Delphi style.
No. She is Cassandra thousands of years old.
I think what we're supposed to infer is that this... And just like other horror movies, or where there is a creepy, old, prophetic person, like in The Shining or whatever, it's like, oh, there's some things that are mysterious. You don't know. When you're older, you'll have all this intuition and bullshit.
But she seems to actually be sort of physically sensitive to what's going on. She says, like, oh, it's happening again, or something to that effect. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that, again, the other sort of thing is that of the margins of society, so, like, old people that we forget, or homeless people, they always end up being the most prophetic, and that's why they're ignored.
Sure.
And hence the...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But it's fucking bullshit.
It is bullshit, and also the dad's reaction... Okay, so hang on. So she says, oh, it's happening again. One of these kids, because there are two kids playing football or whatever, they're playing ball outside.
You get them inside, they love it when they play. No, it loves it when they play.
Yeah, sure enough.
That's fairly creepy.
Yeah, it is. Actually, and that voice work, holy crap, man. I've got an inward boner right now. One of the kids immediately disappears. What boggles the mind is why the dad doesn't immediately crucify her and burn her as a witch.
I'm sort of vaguely, like, you know, because you're going to buy
she's
into
clearly
that.
In
you know,
on
I'm going to buy into that, like, whole trope of crazy preventiveness. What I don't understand is that she was like, okay, so three kids have gone missing. It's like, yeah, my kids are fine. It's like, who would think that? Three kids have gone missing from your streets, not like an adjacent borough of London, or like a town just outside London, or the tube station, whatever. Literally from your streets. Maybe take a little bit more care.
Don't let your kids play outside.
Yeah, and one of those kids isn't even his, so some other parent has gone like, I'm just gonna give it to the most careless guy on the clothes.
In fact,
I was gonna
point that out as well. Let's put a pin in that fact.
Okay.
The kid that disappears is not his kid. Pin?
Yeah, pin. Okay. But it upsets me. A, why he's not just generally more worried or upset. If like my next door neighbour's kid's just got abducted, I might not rub it in their face that I've got a kid. I'd be like, hey, look at my kid, he's playing football, he'd be brilliant. I might not do that. I might just keep him indoors until everything blows over, or they catch the culprit, or whatever it is.
The mother, I can't remember her name, that we're going to be...
Mrs. Webber,
yeah. Whatever. She pops out, we get a hint of, like, oh, the daughter, there's something weird about the daughter, because the old
silhouette
lady looks up,
yeah.
And we see the daughter up there.
That is a creepy-ass silhouette, because I don't know how they find the child actress, right? And this is nothing... I don't want to be, like, you know, to be mean to children or whatever. When you see the silhouette, she's got a giant man hand, like a hand like a fucking shovel, and it's the scariest thing.
Wow.
My first note, that goddamn hand on the window.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I'm just reaching out and taking these kids and putting them in my pocket.
Is that really the most natural pose when you're looking at the window? She always has her hand up against the glass.
I don't know, man.
It's not the most natural.
I genuinely think it's like someone else's hand. Like they've just got crouching down with like a, you know, it's got...
It's a cardboard cutout.
It's her, and then it's like Michael Jordan's hand. like some basketball player or something like that.
We also get, I think, a soundbite-worthy quote, namely...
You want me to call a doctor? Doctor can't help.
Yet another one of those, let's finagle the doctor into this unknowingly, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like some ancillary character saying it.
Still in the cold open, we go upstairs and sit in on Chloe singing the freakiest fucking song.
Oh, no. So it's just lazy writing.
The whole... Well, okay, actually, we'll get to more singing later on. Mm. It's a trope that is revisited all too often in general.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. Not just in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Anyway, Drew Hammer has a point to make. I can see it in his face.
I was just going to sing, I've a creepy present, I must steal your essence. That's what I
Okay, so I think we're done on the cold open. Let's go to the hot open.
Well, we do get the massive revelation in the cold open. The cold open closes with her actually drawing the kid disappearing, and the drawing of the kid running towards the screen, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
Cut to probably NSYNC intro.
Yeah. And did anyone notice that even in this cold open, the mother looked guilty as shit?
Oh, yeah,
like,
definitely.
She knew exactly what was going on.
Well, I don't know if she knows exactly what's going on, but she definitely knows that her kid is responsible.
Yeah, the stage of denial is that's way more built up in that in the mother than the other bits. Yeah, it's a hot open. You land, Dr. and Rosa popped out. They're going on a date, basically. But they're derailed by goings on.
Are they going on a date?
It's a date, isn't it?
Is it a date?
I thought the romance was missing from this episode.
I agree.
It is because they're derailed. He's showing off, taking her to another fun, lovely place for them to hang out and watch the Olympics.
Sure. There is only one line much later on in this episode that kind of hints at this maybe having been intended to be a date, but then sort of ruining it. But let's get to that line when we get to that line.
Sure.
Okay. So yeah, you've got Rose... figuring out what year it is by reference to Shane Ward's Greatest Hits poster, which is on the wall.
Which is hilarious.
Yeah. Shane Ward, for people who don't know, and there will be many people who don't know, he won a series of X Factor in 2005 with the only original Christmas single to be released as part of the X Factor.
Oh, whoa. That was a good one. Hang on, I think I know it. Hang on, let me see if I can... I want to say Breathless.
I think it's That's My Goal.
Oh, okay.
It was the third fastest selling UK single of all time.
Wow.
And yet, at the time of recording, he does not have a record deal.
So
we're recording more than he is.
Oh, poor Shane Ward. I hope he's doing okay.
Sorry, Shane.
But he does say that it's cold because... Yes. something I noticed, and unfortunately it was backed up on IMDb, so people noticed this before, is that this episode was filmed in January.
Oh, really?
They're just about to have the Summer Olympics. You can see their breath. In many scenes, you can see everybody's...
Oh, really?
Every single person's
quite close.
Well, they managed to cover it up by saying that something's sucking the heat out, and there are no leaves on the trees.
I didn't even think about that.
But that also becomes like an actual like plot driver.
Yeah.
At one point. So actually, that's super cool. That's really well done.
Well, yeah, if they did it deliberately, kudos to you.
I reckon all the people on IMDb and TARDIS Wiki need to give at least one extra bonus point for that.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think it's worth it. I think... fine, they can get a decimal point. But if so, I think they should have focused more on the temperature difference rather than the, oh, it smells of metal in some way. Like the air, there's a taste of metal in the air.
There's a Mini and it breaks down and they struggle to push it away and there's a bit of road that cars are having trouble on.
Absolutely no explanation for that car breaking down whatsoever.
We get introduced to the best character in this episode by a long, long way. What is his name?
Kel?
Kel the councilman.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
God, he loves Tarmac.
Doesn't he, though?
He steals every scene he's in.
He does. Absolutely steals every scene that he's in. But well, more on Kel later. Kel's there fixing up the roads.
He is. A Mini drives past, stalls, and apparently this has been happening all week. This is never explained in the episode.
Yeah, but again, I think I get it.
It passes by the spaceship and you could say, oh, there's some energy.
It makes absolutely
no
physical sense, but yes, that's the intimation.
Yeah,
there's something very, very specific about the thing that he's tarmacking that makes it, and that's all it is. It's just,
yeah. Am I the only one? I really feel like they could have done more.
I don't need the technical explanation, because that technical explanation will be bullshit anyway.
I feel like that was part one in a two or three parts deduction that they could have made. Like, oh, wait, hang on, why is my anti-space flower thing not working? Oh, shit, now I remember the Mini. I have to do this thing. I need to walk away from the tarmac.
So, yeah, the Doctor is dancing around sniffing the air. He's letting the air give his hand a tickle.
Mm. Which has not happened, as far as I know, since an episode that we reviewed, in fact, with JD, The War Machines, in which, at the very, very beginning, the Doctor goes, I can feel a tingle in my hand, there's an alien presence. And in this case, it is actually like, oh, look at the hairs at the back of my manly, hairy hand. It's the exact same thing that Hartnell did.
Oh, cool.
So there is, I mean, in some way, he's able to intuit through his senses.
Yeah,
so.
He has, like, as an alien being, his physiognomy does actually, he's like basically a living barometer. He can physically pick up
things. He just chooses not to every other episode.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's exactly like another thing that we're going to encounter in this episode, telepathy.
Okay,
telepathic abilities. How often could he have done that? Fucking every episode, just read people's minds or hypnotize them.
It's a very Tennant thing. It's a very Tennant thing.
Empathy in general.
No, telepathy.
Apparently, I haven't seen, most of them, but like apparently John Pertwee did the same thing.
Yeah.
Someone told me that.
Pertwee Tennant thing?
Possibly.
It's because he does it in Girl in the Fireplace.
Yeah, exactly. Carry on.
Tennant's standing on a little bit of grass next to the goal, and a big burly dad decides to give a shit. What's your game?
Yeah.
And then Tennant is incredibly facetious.
He is.
So this incredibly imposing guy who's about to twat him.
He's a total dickhead.
Yeah, he is.
Well, so one thing leads to another, and we get another introduction of the... what's it called? Not the telepathic paper, the...
The
psychic paper.
Psychic paper. Yes, exactly.
I'm a policeman.
Yeah. Which gives them the roles of a detective duo, and Rose the nickname Lewis.
I wonder how Kevin Waitley feels about that.
Or is that the guy who plays Lewis?
It's a great, again, for our American... American compatriots, I was going to go for Morse.
Okay, fair enough.
It was a great TV series, a detective TV series that was then in his sidekick spins off into another one called Lewis. So Inspector Morse and Lewis, very good Oxford-based detective agency.
Indeed.
Or not agency, just detectives. Anyway.
Now all the residents of the close, including ancient Mabel, are now gathered around them.
They have a power.
Is that her actual name? Mabel?
Yeah, Mabel.
Oh, wow. Well, that's an appropriate name. Could have been Ethel. Could have been...
I was going to go for Delphine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
reference.
Right, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, Mabel She gathers everyone around for a powwow and a finger-wagging session.
Yeah, some literal finger-wagging. Did you think it was racist when the woman just appears from the back? And
oh, yeah.
There's been all sorts like him in this street.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Even the dad, like, what's his name, Kel, goes like, what, just because I'm a councilman, like, oh, we're just here to prep for the Olympics. Even the dad at that point goes, that's not what she meant.
Yeah, it's creepy as shit. I was angry. But also, you leave my Kel alone. Fuck you.
He's my boy.
You're my boy, Kel. Yeah.
Oh, and what did people think about fingers on lips?
Way too ridiculous.
That really upset me.
It's another, I'm not listening.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
But now, fingers on lips, I don't know. Did you do this in Sweden? So it was a thing that we did when we were primary school in England, and I'm sure it still happens, that the way to, you know, it was a thing for children in the classroom. Fingers on lips meant everyone has to be quiet, and you had to put your fingers on your lips as if you were being quiet, as if like your lips were sealed. And that was just a way that everyone was going to be quiet in the room when you're like...
This is a tremendous insight into their culture.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're like seven, it's a thing that happens to all classroom, you know, age children in England. So that's what he's doing. He's
sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
That's what upset me about it, actually. It's the tremendous parochialism of Doctor Who, which is quite clearly now bigger than just appealing to people that have, you know, been in school.
I don't think so, necessarily. Putting your finger against your lips, I think, is actually the international, if not the galactic.
No, absolutely. But
shut up.
But the term, fingers on lips, and then for you to just hold your finger on your lip and be silent.
Yeah, but for me, not having grown up in this country, not having had, experienced the phenomenon of all of my classmates and I holding our fingers to our lips, even I got what that meant.
So I get it, but still, I think that inedible barbarian, you mean, like, there are just too many little British parochialisms that I think he's just hamming up. Upsets me. Anyway.
So we get another reference to, or another hint, at the girl upstairs being really creepy once again with her hand against the window.
Mm.
Cut upstairs to the girl's room where the mother has now joined her, sees the drawing of the kid, why is he so sad? She's in the process of drawing a cat for this boy to play with as well, and... The mother, let's just speed through this a little bit. And in order to distract her daughter, the mother now presses the space bar on her otherwise unused laptop.
Dormant, yeah.
Thus eliciting a live stream of the BBC.
So much to say about it. Well, not so much, but... Like, they quite clearly had a product plan waiting for, you know, that by the Olympics, you'll be able to live stream all this shit from you. Because at the time of viewing, the BBC didn't have this function, I don't think. It's trying to be, like, prophetic, like, you know, like...
Oh, this is the future.
Yeah, this is the future. Knowing fucking full well that the BBC had that in production as an idea. Obviously, you could just press a button and it'd be, but, you know...
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that,
sure.
That, at the time, so we're like, oh, when people look back at this, we'll look really clever. And it's fucking nonsense. It wasn't
an elegant way of portraying it.
Well, I mean, it works now.
Well, that
does work now.
This is the one aspect that they predicted and got right, and then they got the Shane Ward wrong, like, badly wrong. Like, they kept trying to predict shit. Yeah.
I think they knew that was 50-50 at best.
So
the cat is done for, to skip ahead.
Oh, there is a bit of wish, like, why did you draw Dale so sad?
Oh, yeah. It's like, oh, they're not... I didn't draw them sad.
It was like, why didn't you come downstairs, get outside or whatever? And then he was like, you be careful, Mum.
Or I'll draw you, Mother.
It's like, oh, shit, okay. And then she ran...
This kid needs therapy, pronto.
Well, then the mum bails out with the absolute last nail in the coffin. Like, you know some fucked up-ish stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's like, yeah, draw me. Okay, draw me, fine. I mean, if you were an oblivious mother, you'd be like...
Let's finger paint together.
Yeah, exactly, that sort of shit. And the Doc and Rose go hunting.
Yep, they go sniffing down an alleyway.
Yeah, they do. And they smell tinfoil. Is it tinfoil they smell?
Well, they find the cat first.
Yeah.
The cat that coincidentally was being drawn by the little girl. Just at that point, Rose finds the cat, decides to pet it, and boom shakalaka disappears.
And then, quite clearly, a terrible, terrible parallel of Schrodinger's cat. Right, everyone's get that?
Oh, that's clever.
All right, okay, fair enough.
The cat in the box is the cat in the box. She looks inside the box.
Yeah.
The cat is not in the box.
Is it dead or alive, though?
I think once we've gone through this entire plot, we need to... Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm really annoyed me.
When we're done with this entire plot, we need to really discuss what happens to the people who have been sucked into these drawings.
Yeah.
Where are they? And why are they androids? Fuck it, let's leave that for later.
What annoyed me most about the cardboard box incident is that the street, they take great pains to establish at various wide shots. It's fucking spotless. And then suddenly there's just some random cardboard boxes just left around for the cat to walk into. Just for that moment.
Wait, wait, wait. What happens at this point?
You get a bit more of the girl shouting at the pictures in the wall, going, "You don't know what it's like! Why are you never happy? I'm so lonely and you're all together!"
Do you know what I'm serious about that? It's like, they're not all together. You didn't draw them in one picture.
Mm.
If you drew them in one picture, maybe they could interact. Right now, they're just like 2D things looking at you. If you drew them in one picture, maybe they could play a game of fucking football. they would be happy, I don't know.
Dale's football?
Yeah,
absolutely. You got
that? Yeah, that was semi. I'm just like, you're a tit.
Can it only... serious question. Can whatever this entity is, this means of transmigrating people from the real world into drawings, does that only work on living creatures?
Well, it worked on their clothes.
It does work on the clothes. No, hang on. Does she draw the stadium or does she draw lots of people? Because the stadium is still there.
Yeah, I think it's just lots of people.
No, she must draw the stadium. She has to draw the stadium.
I think so as well. She doesn't just draw a circle of people.
Or doesn't draw like 80,000 individual people. She draws the stadium. That's some inconsistent nonsense.
Well, whatever. From the cat disappearing, what is the conclusion that they draw? Because it's not that it's the girl. I was mistaken about that. That's not until they're back in the toilet.
There's something with huge energy is sucking things out of something. Yeah. That's just that normal thing. Something with massive energy.
Yeah, and now we've got to find the source of it.
Yeah.
Sure. So they split up. They walk in different directions. As you said, we get lots of shouting in her room. She can't think of something to draw, maybe, so she just draws a scribble. Mm-hmm. And Rose now encounters said scribble, which is, I think, possibly the only cool part of this entire episode.
You think so?
Yeah, I actually really like that.
I was cool with it until he rubs it out.
Yeah, but that's so dumb. That is
so dumb.
Yeah, have you tried to put a fucking eraser to a pencil, Doctor? Like, can you just erase a pencil? No.
Yeah,
your rubber's gonna get pretty messy.
Also, you can't just, like, put that shit... It's quite brittle. You can't just put that shit in your pocket. It just disintegrates.
Yeah,
doesn't work in this case. A mechanical pencil? Like, I don't know. That upset me.
Anyway, she's attacked by this thing. The Dr. Sonic said, boom. And now they've got something to analyse.
Yeah,
in the TARDIS.
In the TARDIS.
Special TARDIS analytical gloop.
Yes. And we get a soundbite.
Easy for you to say, you don't have kids.
I was a dad once.
What did she say?
Yes.
What? Yeah. Exactly.
And then does not follow up with any other
Not
questions.
At all. And that's the line that I meant. That's the one line where Rose's reaction is like, wait, hang on, shit, you didn't tell me this, but you didn't tell me that before we went on this date. That's the kind of face that she's making. It's like, wait, no. I'm not going to get involved with a single dad.
That was significant and in no way played out in anything else.
So it doesn't refer back to something? Because I assumed I was just...
It does refer back to... it could be a couple of instances, really. Could it?
Have we knew who found anything about this? There is the Doctor's daughter.
There's the Doctor's daughter, but that's later. And
I actually don't really remember that storyline.
I'm sure it crops up in Classic Who. But
in Classic Who, he has a granddaughter, so at some point he must have had children, right?
So
a child.
It's just odd. It's stuff to be secure, but they just didn't go into it.
But it's a nice little hint. The only interesting parts of this story are the bits where it hints at either a rich backstory or an interesting future episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I was...
At
this stage, I think originally and probably in the first viewing, I was still interested in the idea of a girl that can pluck fucking children out of the, thin air. That was still relatively compelling as an idea.
Yeah, as an idea, that's really interesting. And then she starts singing and it's like, no, forget about it. This is not going to happen.
Well, no, it got more annoying when actually... Well, actually, the first time she spoke, I was like, where have they found the only little girl in the world
that sounds like a
grown angry
man.
James Earl Jones? How have they found this little girl? Just like Ray Winston in it. Like, what's happened?
Does she sound like that later on when the creature
No, she's got a normal little girl voice.
Okay, so that's the answer
then.
It's
consistent, but
voice.
I think if I was going to write that thing, I'd have done it as her as a little girl, because that's way creepier.
Yeah, and why actually, that's very true. Because why didn't the mum go like, we're taking you to a doctor because there's clearly something fucked up with your throat?
Or an exorcist, or just anything. Like, yeah, what the fuck is going on with you?
Oh, not even an exorcist. I'm a mother in denial. I don't think there's anything wrong with your psyche or your soul, but you would definitely need to give
you
like...
need a fucking lozenge.
Exactly what I was going to say. Something needs to be done about that throat.
Mm.
Anyway.
The mum as a character, I found myself more annoyed with the mum as a character than the girl. I thought the girl was creepy. That was her raison d'etre.
Mm.
And I thought she was fucking creepy.
Yeah,
and she had an excellent dead-eyed stare.
Oh, I loved the way she said her name. It was so, like, I don't know what, but it was just singular, wasn't it? It was a singularity. Chloe Webber. Like, no, not like, like, you know, the creature, and it's like, you know, one continuous word. Just Chloe Webber. I love Chloe Webber. I'm Chloe Webber. Chloe Webber's brilliant.
Yeah, it's like, I am the human unit known as
Chloe Webber.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was kissed. I enjoyed it. Anyway, moving on.
Well, I sensed Leon was not as happy with little girl.
Oh, no, not at all. I hate her. I mean, in the last... Yeah, I think she should have been CGI'd. Just like I was saying in the last bonus ep that you and I recorded just last week, I'm not a huge fan of kids on TV or in film. Like, the kids should not be put on celluloid.
You're not a big fan of kids, full stop.
No. I'm not a huge fan of kids, but like, kid actors are, as a rule, I mean, there are exceptions, but as a rule, they are... They're just a disappointment to me. And this girl was not an exception to that rule.
Yeah, no, she did. I mean, I think she fulfilled the brief of creepy little kid.
Yeah.
Creepy little kid with you know, the hand of Kobe Bryant and the voice of
James Earl Jones.
Ray Winston. Yeah. they're not similar sounding voices, Ray Winston and James Earl Jones. I just want to get to how different she sounded to a little girl.
Yeah, sure.
Anyhow.
Anyway, in the TARDIS, we get that quote. We get another possibly soundbiteable. Sure, why not?
There's a lot of things you need to get across this universe. Warp drive.
Ooh.
Yeah, I wonder if that's a Star Trek Doctor Who crossover. Anyway, Rose now finally deduces it's the girl.
She deduces it instantly. She puts the whole thing together.
In fact, this is the Rose show. Rose, like, noticed shit was going wrong. Rose noticed the little girl.
Carrying the show.
Yeah, and actually, later on, she turns out to be the heroine, really.
Definitely. And we get a really annoying Tennant moment here. He goes, yes, of course, the girl! Wait, what are you talking about? But he's doing that, like, that crazy, wobbly Tennant face that he does.
He is way worse as an actor at physical comedy than Matt Smith is. Boom, straight up there.
Oh, definitely.
Terrible.
Yeah. Matt Smith is a clown.
Yeah, and they're great at it.
He's great at it. He's so good at it that it, in fact, seems to have taken away a little bit of his potential talent to play a regular person.
Well, I think it's denigrated. Like, so I guess maybe we were starved of that from a doctor's point of view, the clown doctor. You know, for new, because like Eccleston, for the most part, is relatively intense actually when you look back at him.
Oh, he's very intense.
And then so Tennant, we were like, oh, he's fun and good looking, and he wears Converse with a suit. What a cad!
Yeah.
And yeah, now looking back, I'm so less charmed. So less charmed by Tennant.
He might still be my number two for new Who docs.
He's shifting for me. Mm. He changes position with every year.
I certainly didn't notice the forced extent of his gurning the first time around somehow.
Yeah.
He is really stretching his face to places it shouldn't go.
Okay. Hot.
Anyhow, so they're going to go back and do some investigating.
Yeah, and not just that. They're going to confront this girl, right?
Mm.
And somehow save the situation. And the way they're going to resolve it is by using some sort of gadget that he has constructed, right? He has some sort of machine.
That's later.
That's much later.
Oh, is it not in the TARDIS? He's building the thing.
Later. They go back to...
Oh, that's the next TARDIS.
Sorry about that.
Chloe sees the TARDIS.
Yeah. But yes.
You're right, okay.
What they do now...
They go to her.
They go to knock on the mum's door, and instead of barging their way in, they go, all right then, we'll just bugger off, bye.
Yeah.
That's a straight parallel. Not the buggering off, but the tolling up and knocking on front doors is a direct parallel to the Idiot's Lantern. That's pretty much what they do there, don't they? They knock on and they're just like, oh, we're come to...
This whole thing is a straight up parallel to the Idiot's Lantern. Yeah. In the Idiot's Lantern, the whole world is sitting waiting to watch the coronation on the telly. Mm-hmm. In this case, the whole world is sitting waiting for the Olympics.
Well, this is what I was talking about, that parochialist of like, I guess is this a T. Davis?
No.
This isn't written by him.
No. But anyway, but of this era is that we do have these weird little parochial... Like,
I don't think that's specifically English, though.
Well, no, not especially, but it's very much centered around Anglo...
The coronation is,
yeah. Yeah, no, but also the Olympics. Like, it's things that are specifically going to be important to this country, and lots of little things like edible ball bearings and fucking tea and, you know, whatever.
I'm sure edible ball bearings exist in other countries, and I'm sure that other countries watch the Olympics, but they did, you're right, they did pick the year when the Olympics
exactly.
did take place.
They didn't go to Rio, did they? Like, it was
Sure. But it's still a global event.
I see what you mean, but they are global events focusing on England. Global events focused on England.
It's an English show. I don't think
so. It's dialing up the patriotism and that sort of weird thing. And the brand of it, like overseas, getting to sell like basically more Union Jacks and Doctor Who's quirky and British.
Yeah, does that? Do you think that maybe from a marketing standpoint, that's actually to their advantage?
Oh, 100%. It's exactly. It's a brand thing. I think it's a brand thing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I think
sure.
so.
All right. Cool.
It annoys me as an actual British person.
Okay, fine.
It's not just like, you have all of space and fucking time to visit. Stop coming here.
But then you could take any number of, you know, alien companions that, to the whole world, are meaningless. Yeah. Not meaningless. I suppose it would be interesting.
Equally alien.
It would be a nice change-up. But I didn't mind this so much because at the time the episode aired, presumably we hadn't had hadn't won the Olympic bid that much earlier. We'd just beaten France, the Olympic bid. Yes, Paris, we've got the Olympics, you haven't. Ha ha ha, let's celebrate this via Doctor Who.
No, I think we're in deep mourning, aren't we? No point.
The initial wave of optimism had worn off. We were like, shit, we've got to host the Olympics and not look like idiots.
Anyway, so they go back and they're doing the domestic approach. As they're sending the Idris lantern in and they're going to knock on doors and you don't need any help. All right, well, we'll just leave you to your demonic child by yourself, all alone. Just you.
Was that the way that they approached whatever the family was called in the Idris lantern?
No.
They barged their way in there.
But then it's a different...
Yeah, we're royal inspectors or something.
Yeah. But yeah, this time, I think that the point was is they identified someone that needs help and...
Yeah.
They wanted an invitation.
And accurately so, the mother goes, actually, hang on, wait a moment, how could you help her? Why do you want to see her? Yeah. One thing leads to another, all of a sudden this, yeah, exactly. And now they're actually speaking to the girl. Lots and lots of creepy drawings all over the place.
They don't get up to her immediately.
No.
First of all, they see her in the kitchen, and she's drinking milk straight out of the carton and putting it back in the fridge. So she's basically just irredeemable, but the doctor's going to try anyway with a Vulcan symbol.
Yes.
Why?
A second Star Trek reference in this episode.
Yeah, I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. I think so.
Why is he doing that?
I don't know. As a joke? As a thing? Apparently. Is that actually the case? Is like 1 in 10 people or something to that effect can't do the Vulcan sign? Right. 3 of us around this table, all 3 of us can do it.
Yeah, 6 Vulcan hands.
Yeah, can you do it? Podcast land, write us. anyway, so whatever, they try to establish contact with this girl. She fucks off. Rose goes and snoops around the house, goes into her room, in fact, sees all the creepy drawings, and finds in a closet...
Another devil.
Another devil. Yeah, you're right. Another devil.
Yeah. I can't remember thinking, that's fucking dark. That's dark as shit.
Yeah, it's
like,
super dark.
So the backstory to this, and I'm sure you've all watched the episode, is that this is Chloe's... abusive dad.
Yeah.
It's not hinted at. Like, it's hinted at in the way that they don't go into details, but, like, he's straight up abusive.
Yeah, the mum said that she used to bear the brunt.
Yes.
Yeah, and exactly.
He died and everyone was happy about it. She's got this Penny Crayon effect that not only can she capture living things, but she can also bring things to life.
Mm.
Yeah.
I.e. Tribble, or what, you know, the graphite ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Scribble,
and this devil thing in her closet. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I think we need to discuss that when we're through with this episode.
Oh, 100%.
Because it makes no sense. At all. The mother still is in denial.
Yes. Even though Rose is setting everything out in perfect, accurate detail.
Yeah. This devil dad thing is almost like it's on the verge of sucking Rose into the closet. The doc, like, pulls her out at the right moment, closes the doors. The mother just wants them to leave. Like, immediately wants them to leave. At this point, I'm thinking, show her the fucking demon.
Well, she's seen it 5 seconds ago. So.
She hasn't seen it, because the doctor is, like, blocking the doors. Like, the mother wants to open the door. He's like, no, no. Or he and Rose both are like, no, don't open that door. It's like, no, actually, yes, open that door just to catch a glimpse of this thing, and then let's all sit down and talk about how your girl should not be allowed to draw.
Okay, the absolute worst thing about this that we've all missed at this point is that why doesn't the thing just get, like, the scribble just... was bouncing around and
what does this thing look like?
Why is this like, oh yeah, I'm a person now. Yeah, my legs don't work all that well, but I'm pretty sure I can get out of this fucking closet. What? Like, I don't understand. Like, the scribble could get out of the garage. Why couldn't this fully?
Why did the scribble materialize in the garage in the first place? So she draws it on a piece of paper.
Why doesn't it immediately pop out of the paper?
Of the paper, exactly. Why does it appear in some random garage?
Maybe it did and then went for a little trip and then ended up in a garage.
Okay, I guess that is possible.
Yeah, just off-screen bats.
And in this case, she draws it on the wall itself.
Yeah. Why doesn't it just pop out and go, all right, now I'm your abusive dad? Like, why is it, like, coming out and then... And then we have to, and, like, you know, closing the doors
helps.
Yeah,
it's not towards the end where it's very slowly.
No, he's, like, he's constantly there and...
Could be because, and this is complete conjecture, but the Isolus that is controlling Cloyobba puts the drawings on the wall to rule them as a tyrant of the new drawing society, and you know has some power to keep them there. Doesn't care about the scribble, so the scribble just fucks off, and Isolus lets it go. And the same thing happens with the dad. So when the Isolus leaves later on, then the dad can start
shit.
So the Isolus keeps the dad in the closet. Like, deliberately keeps him there? Is that what you're saying?
Stops him from escaping.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm into that. Because why would all the kids stay in their paintings?
Yeah.
Oh, no, but then... Actually, no, sorry.
I was about to
buy into that, but now...
Once they've been drawn, they are trapped in the paintings.
Yeah, they were alive and then got trapped. The scribble never existed, so he got drawn and then was born. And the dad is dead. There's slightly different cases.
It's not the dad, though. It's the dad that appears in her nightmares.
Yeah, exactly. So that has more in common with the scribble than it does with kids.
If it
kids
has existed, the means
that
to...
exists.
Right.
Okay, and the scribble as well actually appears as a huge ball of, like, electric graphite.
Mm.
So is this demon thing, when, spoiler alert, towards the end it actually does come out of the closet...
Is it just angry graphite?
Exactly. Is it made out of graphite? Or is it a demon thing? Because if it's a demon thing, then and this creature, the Isolus, can actually create things out of nothing. Why doesn't it just draw all of its 3 or 4 billion siblings? Problem solved. It can create
life out of nothing. I'm going for big shrug here.
I feel like that's a plot hole.
Giant plot hole. Huge plot hole.
Massive plot hole. 4 billion times a plot hole.
Why doesn't it draw itself a wormhole
yeah,
to jump
exactly.
into?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, exactly. That then brings us back to the question I asked before. Like, is it solely focused on living beings, plus clothes, whatever?
Yeah.
But, like, or could it draw itself a repair kit for its little spaceship? Or could it draw itself a new spaceship?
Not to spend too much time on this, but the sheer fact that the scribble got to be a thing, that's not a thing that exists.
Yeah.
Right, and the sheer fact that the dad who was dead and now isn't dead means that actually living doesn't really make a damn difference, does it? Like, to this thing, it doesn't make a difference,
and it can
just create whatever the fuck it likes.
Yeah,
giant plot hole. Thanks. There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
feel free
welcome.
To bail out now. Anyway,
okay. So what happens next? They're kicked out of the place, right?
They're kicked out, and then they go back to the TARDIS. It's the second TARDIS.
No, you're right.
This isn't what happens.
Oh my dang!
What happens is. The doctor tackles the mum's denial head on and says, you're dismissing this, you're angry, but I will actually believe you. Let's go downstairs, have more of a chat about it. It's about an ionic holding pen that the Isolus is using to keep the kids in.
Okay.
Which the holding pen may be an explanation for why the demon doesn't go crazy, but whatever.
The drawings, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Then they go back upstairs, and after the Vulcan symbol from earlier, the Doctor does a full-on mind meld.
Oh, yes. Exactly. So this is now the second time, I think, in New Who that he's using his weird mind-melding capacity.
And then he's demanding parley with the Shadow Proclamation.
The Shadow Proclamation.
Yeah. This is my favourite bit.
That's pretty cool.
Is when the kid says... I don't give a fuck about shadows.
Your like, parleses.
Yeah, screw you. I don't give a fuck about this stuff. And it's like, why don't more things say that to him? I don't give a fuck about you. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that is pretty cool. I actually quite like in that line as well. Like, I demand parley as per the Shadow Proclamation. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm less cool. I like the response book better.
Oh, yeah.
But so we're treated to the idea that she has been inhabited by an Isolus, which is the first and only mention of the Isolus.
Yeah.
And they're basically these big, like, flowery seed things that, like, that almost infinitely travel through space together.
Exactly. He says, like, oh, forever or for an infinity, and then makes it finite by saying, like, 1,000 lifetimes or something to them.
And then they travel sort of together, and they play games, psychic games, to keep themselves all... They're a big family that travels together.
And that explains the let's create something out of nothing. So just... As they are floating through the emptiness of space, they have no toys, so they invent toys and invent worlds to play. To play in or
it's
to play
super
with.
Super cool as an idea.
It's very cool. But if that's the case, if you can invent a world, just stay in it. Like, what is compelling you to float through space for millennia?
Well, what's compelling this incredibly empathic mother to send her empathic billions of children across the universe where they were never to be separated?
Here it is. What's compelling us to do fucking anything?
Join us for another episode of the Philosophy Podcast.
It's absolutely not a discussion we can have. Let's just take that as writ. That's what they do.
Also, according to this episode specifically, the doc says they all do travel together. Like, all 4 billion of them travel together. And it was just sheer coincidence. It was a solar flare that took them off course or something.
Let's see, again, that annoyed me. Because there's nothing particularly remarkable about solar flares or flares from stars or energy waves or any of that sort of shit.
Oh, but they ride on...
They miss all of them all the damn time, except for one...
Except for hours.
Yeah, unless this is happening all and this Isolus scattered around the fucking universe being, like, wreaking havoc on other closes and avenues around the galaxy.
Cul-de-sacs and lanes.
Absolutely.
Watch out.
Or that they've just this particular family were just had lost their sat nav and they just fucked it up completely.
Well, there was an ionic disturbance from the solar flare, and they're all about ions, aren't they? Are ions a massive source of energy?
If I could explain to you what an ion is, I'd probably be a better, like.
Isn't it just to do with some?
If I could explain that to you, I would explain that to you. I can't.
Some atoms have more electrons than others and shed them or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah, that
sounds
a
much better than anything I
physics.
All right, so at this point we know that she is... Basically, she is possessed by this thing, and the doctor now needs to perform an exorcism.
But the possession is to do... And this is, you know, the big theme of it is to do with love.
Yeah, exactly.
They're two lonely children... and by children, we mean one millennia-old, like, godlike flower and one actual child.
Yeah.
And they're both lonely, so they found each other.
Oh, poor little terrible actress.
And they're not found each other. It's like, well, they're two, then they're kindred spirits. Like, no, one just sneezed one day and had to fucking ingest this, like, this flower thing, like... Chloe Webber didn't give a fuck about this flower, but anyway, the flower is all about.
But the flower could
Chloe
sense.
Webber.
Yeah, but the flower could sense that she too was lonely.
Yeah, lonely. But
isn't that the explanation? She says, "Oh, I could feel that there was a loneliness equal to my own, and for that reason, I decided to violate this."
Yeah, absolutely.
Girl.
That's bullshit. It's like, lonely. All right, we can go play on the swing set. You can't be part of my brain now. Like, those aren't the ethics. So we now know who the alien is.
Before they go downstairs. Do we find out that it's through the drawings that she captures other kids? I think so.
First of all, the devil in the cupboard wakes up and the doctor says, what do you do when she has a nightmare? Which I think is very clever of
you. It is very clever, but the show loses me even more when it turns out, oh well, what I do is I sing to her. Really shitty melodramatic singing to this episode.
The singing as expression of love and then the application of evil, or the triumph over evil as a just general theme in do shit and singing and love and, you know, is so saccharine in this fucking episode. It's so sweet.
Yeah,
and like,
I don't buy any one of the countless sentimental moments in this episode.
Not a single one. I'm with you on that. So, actually, this is a good point to explore my theory about the dad and the darkness and the why they've been... that I think they knew. I think then the writers knew that, oh, fuck, this is sugary sweet and nonsense at this point. Let's introduce this ridiculously juxtaposed dark element of an abusive father that's going to come to, like, you know, the dead abusive father that's going to come back and start abusing them again just to take the fucking edge off.
Or possibly they thought of the abusive dad, which is a much more interesting concept. Like, an abusive dad who is, like... He's dead, he could have gone to hell, now he's actually in their flat as a devil or a demon, which is like, okay, oh, cool, I get that parallel. Just to get away from the child abuse angle here.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah, it really is. But the other alternative being that they wrote this actually quite interesting, very grown-up story, and then went... Whoa, we're gonna scare the shit out of our core audience, or possibly we've just kind of crossed a line that we shouldn't have crossed. Let's add lots of sentimental nonsense.
Okay, so moving on from the darkness of the sort of abuse storyline, we're going for a second trip to the TARDIS.
Yes.
And this time the girl follows them.
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, because where's the mum? Just letting a girl run around.
Letting her, like...
buy some more pens.
Yeah, exactly. Hang on, let's stay in the house for a little bit. They've already established that what she draws gets captured in the drawings. Then they go downstairs and just leave her in a room with a bunch of drawings.
That shit happens twice. Right?
Yeah, it does.
Twice.
It's so annoying.
That it's like... Don't let her do anything. All right, well, I've just...
Stay in your room.
Yeah, with all your pens and shit. And they're like, oh, I've confiscated all the pens. Like, well, maybe watch her for a little while. She's quite clearly got some shit she needs to work through.
Just tie her hands behind her back.
Yeah.
Keep her in a corner where you can constantly keep her under guard.
Just skip this episode of Jeremy and Kyle. Just this one. Like, you know, you'll catch up Hollyoaks Omnibus on Sunday. Like, you do not need to do anything right now other than watch your... like, impossibly powerful child steal children. That's the only thing in your world, right?
Super goddamn annoying. And then, when they do leave, the mother does take all the pens, she thinks, but it turns out the daughter has, like, a bunch of pens stuffed in a doll.
Yeah, she rips its head off. I like that.
I like the fact that she rips the head off the doll.
Just the sheer brute savagery of it. It's like, I'm not thinking twice. Fuck you, doll.
Why has she stuffed pens in a doll?
I don't know. I guess...
It's like, just in case my mum figures this out, she's probably going to be dumb enough to not keep me under constant guard.
See, I mean, don't get me wrong. If ever I have kids, I'm never going to tie them up for any reason. Right?
Well, except
I'm going on the record here. Except if they start abducting children, I'm going to restrain them.
I think
I'm putting that on the record.
It's the lesser of two evils.
I think that still makes you a good parent,
doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes you a less evil parent.
What the fuck are you doing? Why have you just been like, all right, you sit here and just stop stealing children, and I'm going to go do a Tesco shop. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Lackadaisical mothering in general.
Ugh.
Alright, whatever. So the kids follows her out, or follows Rose and Doc out to the TARDIS.
Yep. Now the Doctor is building his device, whatever it is, and him and Rose are having an argument about whether they can sympathise with the girl, or...
And actually, maybe this is the bit where he says, I used to have a daughter, or I had a daughter once, or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, alright.
Yeah, I was a dad once.
Maybe. I was a dad once, yeah.
He definitely goes into the, I know what it's like to be lonely and alone. It's like, oh, okay, I totally sympathise, but you did kill your entire race at this point in the canon. So, six of one.
Either way, he is constructing a gadget. What is this gadget for? Is it in order to... like, revive the pod?
It's to find the pod. It's to find it.
Oh, it's to find
it. Because they know that the pod is knocking about. It's somewhere nearby. It's drawing lots of heat. They need to find it, charge it, ask it. Because it's obviously taking heat. So they need to find it, put the isolus in, and send it back to mummy. Right? That's the plan. So they put together this thing, and... Okay.
The TARDIS knows that it's in the road. Yeah. So they're going to walk down the road, and this thing's going to lead them to it.
Yeah. Right, okay. In that case, yeah. Skip what I was going to say.
So, long story short, Chloe... steals the Doctor with the pens that she secreted, and the device smashes on the ground, and that's how we're alerted to the Doctor being abducted.
And yeah. The TARDIS is gone.
The TARDIS is gone as well.
I don't really understand why the TARDIS had to go. Because in other episodes, Leon, this is your theory about the TARDIS having to disappear and then reappear to save...
It's not even my theory, it's the Davis principle.
The Davis principle, sorry.
But this it doesn't really apply in this case.
No, so why did it have to go?
Just to prevent Rose from taking what is clearly a spaceship to somewhere where it might be able, or time machine even. Maybe the thing knows that it's a time machine. Either way, to prevent Rose from using technology to stop the Isolus.
Okay, I'll bite generally, but I just don't think it's that. Like, I mean, she can't fly the fucking TARDIS or do any of the things that you need to do to make a TARDIS work, right?
Okay, so here's another question about the TARDIS being drawn. We haven't really gotten to that part of the story yet, but if everything that is in a drawing is accessible to the person in the drawing, later on the Doctor actually, like, points at, in the drawing, at the Olympic torch.
That he drew,
exactly. So either he drew it, or... possibly, somewhere knocking about in the TARDIS, he has a 2012 Olympic torch.
Or is nipped off in his TARDIS, got an Olympic torch.
Could he not take the TARDIS and travel out of the drawing?
What upsets me again about that is, like, oh, when Rose, like, oh, he drew that. It's like, how? With what? How?
Yeah. Why? Why is
love.
This? Oh, don't get me started on love. So if the Doctor can draw an Olympic torch... could he not maybe write the solution on the piece of paper? Like, or could
Rose, if you could throw this into, I mean, you could go for the Olympic torch, some bit of just fire.
Yeah, like, or maybe we get Rose just completely misinterpreting this and going like, oh, you're right, I have to smash the Olympic torch. I have to get the Olympic torch as far away as possible from this thing.
You're right, I need to light a dildo on fire. Got it.
At this stage, we could also... equally ask, why doesn't she draw Rose as well?
Yeah.
And then everybody's trapped in the paper.
That's a very good question. Why not just do
end
that?
End of episode. End of series.
End of series. Doctor Who, we like you.
Anyhow.
So you had to go out on such a crap episode.
The one sort of silver lining here is that the person that's done all the legwork in this episode gets to be the heroine.
Yeah. And rightly so. I mean, within the confines of a terrible episode, she does a good job.
So Rose sets off to find the pod.
Yeah.
And bumps back into my favourite, Kel.
Hey, Kel! Hey.
Actually, no, sorry. I've jumped lots, all sorts of guns.
She goes straight to the kids' room, sees the drawing.
And just like, you know, bring him back, do it, you know. And she says no.
Yeah, and then she goes out to find the pod and Kel's van.
Yeah.
Okay, that's true. Also, I wonder if this is the reason for this is simply budget constraints or maybe time pressure or something. Mm. In the cold open, we get to see an actual cartoon animation of the kids in the drawing running towards, like, the front of the drawing, right?
Yeah.
We never see any drawings move later on in the entire episode.
No.
The Doctor at this point could just be jumping up and down, communicating with her. We could have had the equivalent of the episode with Clara and Capaldi's Doctor, where she's running around with the tiny TARDIS and the Doctor is communicating to her, sort of is incapable of interacting with the outside world, but communicating to her through the TARDIS. We could have had the equivalent where he speaks to her through this drawing.
Here's a trick. What if they only move if the Isolus let them? Like Drew's theory earlier of, like, these things are imprisoned and it's their fiefdom until she doesn't want it to be anymore. So maybe that's the solution. And the second one, maybe it's like a blink effect. I mean, we got privy to one bit of movement,
yeah,
but maybe none of these things can move unless you're not looking at them.
Okay, yeah. Sure.
I don't know why, it's a theory.
It's definitely
it's
a theory.
It's not a theory, it's a hypothesis. So the Doctor's trapped within the yellow piece of paper, and Rose, after being distraught of being left alone, needs to go save the day. So she's off in the road and
figures out.
Encounters Kel. Yeah. Well, encounters Kel, and through chatting with Kel, figures out that in the tarmac, in his perfectly laid tarmac.
Yeah, his cherished dear tarmac.
Smooth as a baby's bottom.
And in here is the funniest joke, like, for episodes, but definitely in this episode, is Kel's council rant.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His council rant is
let's soundbite that entire thing.
Oh, please.
Let's do that. Soundbite.
Stop! You just took a council axe! digging up a council road! I'm reporting you to the council!
Thanks, Kel.
Now, so here's a bit, here's a sort of like, well, I don't know if it's a British idiom per se, but I found that one British idiom fairly charming, of like, there are definitely jobsworths that work at the council, that hold the council in the highest of all regards, yeah. And it was just the, it was perfect.
Yeah, okay, so she figures it out, the thing is in the tarmac, she uses the axe.
I like it, that seems got a lot of energy.
Agreed, yeah. It's a good thing.
Taking the shit out of the road. How many of us have wanted to do that? Just take a pickaxe or something. Probably a road.
Yeah. So far, by the way, everything is, even though there are some sort of, well, rather silly scenes like the Kel scene, it's a rather silly way of deducing, oh, right, so it's in the tarmac. Regardless, so far, it's still a scientific approach, right? Like, it was drawn to heat. It has absorbed some of the heat, so it is kind of tribbling, but it doesn't fully work. Hence, later on, she finds out, oh, I need to lob this into the fire of the torch. Mm. But it's still scientific. There is no mention of lovey-dovey feelings or happiness or the sense of belonging or any kind of sing-song or bullshit. It's still scientific and it still works.
Oh, no. No, I didn't even think about this. But Kel goes into great pains as to describing how much love he puts into the fucking tarmacking.
Oh, God damn it.
How clever is that?
God damn it.
Oh, come on, that's clever.
I like that.
He does go to great pains to describe how much love.
No, you're right, you're right. I think that probably is a deliberate point, but
practically erotic with this bit of road.
He should have made it less smooth and maybe added a groove or two. But whatever, you're right. That's, I'm sure that was a deliberate point, but I don't like it as a concept.
Well, fine, but still, I think I'm, having discovered that during the course of this, like,
yeah, the audible clink.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well done.
You did well unearthing that. So, now we go back into the house, and we have the exact thing that you were describing before. The mum has gone into the kitchen to make herself a drink, and she is just standing around in the living room with a drink while Rose says, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Watching, I removed every pencil.
Watching the Olympics as well, because then that's the when we see the stadium disappear.
Oh yeah,
stadium
you're right.
Full of people disappear
because the girl is upstairs. She's now drawn the entire stadium.
Yeah,
I can't remember. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure she does draw the entire actual stadium.
The actual stadium,
complete with stadia.
Yeah, but the stadium itself is still there. Just the people have disappeared.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. Why did the mother not realise that you can draw with more things than pencils and crayons?
Genuinely, why didn't she handcuff her to something?
Yeah.
To a radio.
To a radio.
I don't understand.
Well, the mother doesn't even react in this scene when the stadium empties of people.
Yeah.
At this stage, she seems almost completely numb. I don't know if that is some real psychological state they're trying to set up there, or if the actress was
she's entered some sort of fugue state from the years of abuse and now a kid abducting people. Like,
it's possible.
All right, I'll buy that.
Hey!
Yeah, I think that's psychologically, story checks out.
Fair.
So, despite having abducted tens of thousands of people at once, this space flower child is still feeling lonely, now needs to abduct the entire world.
Yeah. But can I just, could you maybe soundbite what Hugh Edwards says? Hugh Edwards is saying, "Oh no, the stadium's empty. Let's cut to Bob in the studio." And then goes,
"It's impossible. Bob, can we join you in the box? Bob. Not you too, Bob."
I love that. Yeah. I thought that was really sweet. I mean, he's a newsreader, but he spends more time acting than actually reading the news. He is the BBC's go-to fictional drama newsreader. He's in everything. And he reappears in Doctor Who many times.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's good. He's good. Fair enough. Okay, so then Rose is now, he's got the pod, run upstairs, and the doctor, and you know, treats her to what the solution is, which is
the torch.
Yeah, because that has all the love and adulation and fire of the spirit of London.
Which, again, Hugh Edwards makes completely clear. He spells it out in his commentary. He's saying, this has become more than a torch. It's now a symbol of hope and a beacon of love.
Single entendre. So... Do they prevent her from drawing the world? They don't.
No, so she's still drawing.
It's actually quite an intense scene.
Because she's gonna let the demon dad out,
Yeah, exactly.
If they'd stop it. Whereas I'd be like, do you know what? I'm going to take my chances with A, this Crayola fucking thing, because I reckon I could probably lamp it. And B, I'm pretty sure I could knock down a small kid. Like, I reckon it wouldn't take that much effort to just, like,
and in
just
fact,
deck her.
Like, possessed?
Wouldn't you,
even if she's possessed.
Oh, definitely. But, I mean, they were able to hold her down in the bed earlier on.
I feel like, I mean, I don't want to hurt a kid, but she's trying to abduct the world. So I reckon I'm well within my rights to knock her down.
Yeah. And if I don't knock her down, like, even if I lose, the alternative is I do nothing and I also am part of the world that gets abducted. Like, that you have nothing to lose.
So what you're saying here is, if I had kids, I'd never hit them, except...
Yes, I would, I would never...
if they're possessed by some weird space crowd that wants to kidnap the entire world.
I'm going on record. I'm never going to restrain my children unless they start abducting other children. And I'm never going to hit my children unless they start abducting the planet I live on.
Okay.
Everyone cool with that?
Remember
that out there.
Yeah, I think there are... Yeah, sure. No, I'm completely on board with that.
But okay, so, if my kid does that, getting a fucking backhander.
okay, so she's still drawing the world. Rose pops out. Coincidentally, just at this time, the man running with the torch is passing through... What's it called again? Something Kelly Holmes Close?
Dame Kelly Holmes Close.
Bingo. And throws this pod into the air.
But not until she said, "Feel the love!"
Whispering it into this shitty little pod that somehow finds its way to the flame.
Yes, and I should say that at this point, as the flame passes, that's when it starts squeaking like a treble.
Mm.
Yeah. I also don't understand that. So why does the pod feel love? Like, surely the Isolis feels love in the...
Yeah, the pod is actually just the spaceship.
It's just a spaceship. Unless it's like the TARDIS and actually a living thing. But that's not very well explained.
Yeah, actually, no, that's a super good point. It is separate from... Like, let's say that they're both alive. Like, just like the Doctor and the TARDIS are alive. Here, the Isolis and the spaceship are alive. The spaceship is now free to go join the other pods in space. But the Isolus is still stuck in this girl.
The day is essentially saved. Isolus knows he can go home, so it goes home.
Yeah.
It's like, I love you, Curly Webber, but fuck you.
Flies off, vacates her mouth, and then we get...
Oh, the girl's voice is returned to a normal girl.
Yeah, and at this point, the episode really started to lose me. It started to lose me when Hugh Edwards was talking about Beacon of Love, and, by the way, now we only care about the Olympic torch. The stadium of... disappeared people. I'm sure the police will sort that out.
No, they're back.
No, they're back. Yeah, exactly.
No, but
everyone is back except for the Doctor. It's still daylight, by the way. Sorry, hang on, you're about to make a point.
I meant before the whole throw the pod into the air, into the torch thing. The coverage cuts from the empty stadium back to the torch.
You're
running towards the stadium now as if they're going to go ahead with it when all the athletes have disappeared and... So yeah, it was only at this point for me that the episode really actually began to lose it completely and didn't make any sense in its own world.
Yeah, surely martial law would reign in the UK at this point.
No, I'm going to give...
No one's getting near that stadium.
I'm giving them 30 minutes worth of confusion.
Okay.
Right?
30 minutes worth of confusion?
30 minutes worth of... No one can really explain this. Let's... No, unless we get confirmed reports of anything, let's... cut to something.
It's on live TV. Anyone can just pop around a corner. I'm sure there are policemen outside the stadium. They just look in, confirm it's empty, go, no, lock this down.
But honestly, that shit does not happen. That shit doesn't happen. Like, you know, with all the sort of terrible, terrible things that have happened, like, relatively recently, one being just before this episode aired, the first 30 or 40 minutes of coverage and new stuff is garbled and...
And it's directed by the media as opposed to the government.
Yeah, absolutely.
So actually, while the BBC is...
30 minutes worth of fucked up.
While the BBC... 30 minutes, I think, sounds like a lot of time.
I think an armed rapid response unit would get there in 5 or 10.
That's true,
whatever.
Yeah. But the BBC wouldn't be covering it. So that's actually... You're both right, or we're all right. Like, the BBC...
Let's have a hug.
No.
Oh, I'm feeling the love all right.
Oh, God damn it. All of these things are actually happening. Like, the BBC is covering this, but while that's happening, I would much rather be watching the episode that's about the crazy Torchwood / SWAT team approach to the stadium where they're trying to figure out what's happening. Like, where have all these people gone?
Is Torchwood a thing? Come back next week.
So anyway, the pod's in the torch, the stadium's back, kids are back,
They're all saying "Mummy," which was a dagger through my heart every time the kids said "Mummy." Oh. Several reunited kids.
Oh, Chloe Webber.
Mummy, and then Chloe Webber does it. As
yes.
Well.
Let's return to the pin that I put in the very, very beginning of this episode.
Cool.
So the dad with the two kids in the garden playing, right? The kid who gets abducted is not his son. Cut to the very end of the episode. His son is fine, by the way. Cut to the very end of the episode. That dad is reunited with his son. Fuck you. That son was never kidnapped.
That we know of. Do you mean, just like, I assume she was just carrying it. She was drawing the entire time.
Well, so she also kidnapped that dude's kid? God damn it.
Set it up with one establishing shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes 5 seconds.
Ugh.
Fair enough. So anyway, we're going through, everything's seemingly great.
Yeah, except that the doctor hasn't returned yet. Still daytime. Cut to nighttime, or later that evening.
Well, there's another thing first. In relation to that, I don't know why Rose is so worried when everybody else comes back, but she's worried as if the doctor might not.
Yeah.
I don't get why she would be worried that there'd be a difference there. And you've also got... Oh, go on.
I think I would be worried, thinking that even though logically that might make sense, if I was her, I'd be like, but also, so much stuff that I go through doesn't make any damn logical sense. This might be one of those things.
Yeah, but she still waits until it gets dark outside to be reunited or to find that the doctor has been liberated instead of, easiest possible thing, go and see if the TARDIS is there again. Because the TARDIS disappeared as well, right?
Yeah.
So the TARDIS was in the same drawing as the doctor. Go and see if the TARDIS is back. If the TARDIS is back, the doctor's back.
Yeah. It's an establishing shot. It takes 5 seconds. The second thing is that Demon Dad is a threat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right.
The thing in the evening. Mm. He is at the top of the stairs.
And we get another sing-song moment.
Okay. Yeah. What really annoyed me about this is, like, why is Demon Dad so slow?
Agreed. Okay, so is Demon Dad
very slow?
He was always drunk, apparently, so maybe he's just sort of staggering.
But is Demon Dad being controlled by Chloe Webber?
No. Now he's now free. Gone, he's just a thing that exists.
But how is he then defeated? He is defeated by her no longer being afraid to confront him, right?
That is in no way explained.
Oh, in no way.
Yeah. Right?
Rose just intuits that and shouts it through the letterbox.
Yeah. Like, but he feeds off your fear if you sing and be merry and, I don't know, whatever.
But the fear aspect of why he even exists or what the Osiris was doing is in no way referenced.
No, it's never explained, just like it is never fully explained what happens when you have been drawn, when you've been absorbed by one of these drawing thingies. Mm. Anyway, let's leave that for afterwards. They defeat Demon Dad by singing...
the same song that they've sung at every point.
The same goddamn song.
Where does it go?
It just disappears. I guess it just disappears.
It crumples up
Because the scribble got defeated by Sonic.
Yeah.
I guess that's something...
Yeah, it's the power of love. It's the exact same thing as with the pod. Yeah. The pod didn't have enough energy to fly into the, or like to guide itself towards the flame.
Honestly,
but by feeling the love, it managed to. So now the dad demon feels the love of his, his former family, and thus is defeated. Yeah, it's utter garbage.
When you have a sufficiency of loving relationships, then all your foes dissolve. Or something.
God damn it.
I was most annoyed by Demon Dad's limited vocabulary. He just kept saying, "Chloe, I'm coming to hurt you," over and over and over again. It reminded me again of the "Belly's Gonna Get Ya" advert. But I think everything does. I think it's just a great advert.
That upset me that's upsetting, isn't it? That's an upsetting thing to hear on a TV.
It's a super upsetting thing.
But also, there's absolutely no nuance in there.
No, but it is
Could
also...
Could he not have said something else?
Okay, hang on. In the writer's / the demon dad's defense, it's not the actual dad. It's the dad from her nightmare, and her nightmare is likely to be very banal. Okay.
Very simplified.
So they defeat it with singing, and Rose intuits that, and whatever. And then they're... how is she watching the torch race?
Yeah, at this point, rather than go back to the TARDIS... she is actually watching the telly with, if I'm not mistaken, the Webbers.
The Webbers.
Yeah.
Chloe Webber.
She's got nowhere else to go.
She not have had enough of the Webbers at this point?
Let's say there's just some trauma-induced, like, lol, I don't know, let's say that. But, okay, we're going to get into... We're getting into the worst fucking thing.
I hate
about
this bit so much.
This episode.
Okay.
Right.
Deep breath.
So, Torchbearer is running towards the stadium for a gleeful joy, like, opening of the Olympics.
Yeah, this is shortly before he suffers terrible nerve damage from his intergalactic experience.
And it was like, oh, he was hit by lightning. Was he?
I didn't see that.
When he's running with a torch, like, there's a massive flame. The flame does get...
Okay, so the reporter says he was hit by lightning at some point. Okay, I'll
well, I guess they saw the pod.
Yes, I'm fine with that.
Staggering slightly.
That's not my issue. So he staggers, he falls over, and he falls to the ground.
Just one gives a shit about
and
him
it's
at
like,
this point.
The Olympic torch is dying. It's like, and the dream ends here. It's like, why does it?
Does this mean the Olympic dream is dead?
Yeah. Why does it? There is literally hundreds of handlers and other people, runners, and like.
And let's care more about about supposedly the Olympic dream being over than someone possibly having died on live TV.
Yes. And so even worse, it gets worse. It basically goes downhill. And then...
What? Is it just now going downhill?
No. We're already on the way. We're halfway down the hill. There is a deep ravine at the bottom of this fucking hill.
Okay.
And the deep ravine is, our man has entered the track and has picked up the torch. And it's the fucking doctor. A, why is he there? Why is he materialized there? What's that about?
Why didn't he go straight to Rose? Hours ago.
Why is he picked up and now our fucking vassal for, like, you know, the Olympic spirit? That's weird. Do you know what would have been much better? If it was still in the street or something was there and it dropped and Kel was just at the... Because he represents what was good about London in this fucking...
Very true.
In this fucking episode.
Very,
not
very
the
true.
Doctor who nips in every so often and says shit about ball bearings. Kel would have been a much nicer...
Agreed.
Because he's the everyman.
Very, very good point. I do know why the doctor took the torch and ran with it, but I agree it would have been so much better if Kel did it.
So much better.
The reason the doctor actually deliberately does this is because it turns out the pod is actually in the torch. It hasn't already been freed. It's only when he then lights the proper Olympic torch that it does escape into space.
Mm.
So he's basically still on the job. He's still working the mission.
I think the sort of narrative.
There would have been more love if it had been
Kel. Because we'd all, like, if there was a thing, I'd have cheered. That'd have been a thing. You know, like, the council worker being the torchbearer.
Yeah.
That'd have been cool.
Fun bit of trivia. Mm. I was reading this during the smoke break on TARDIS Wikia. So after this episode, there was an actual, like, petition to get David Tennant to carry the torch at the 2012 Olympics, but because he was no longer the doctor, Matt Smith carried the torch at the 2012 Olympics.
Why?
Yeah.
Honestly, why?
Same doctor, just a different generation.
Incarnation, yeah.
Why would any doctor get to... It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, but thousands and thousands of people carried the torch all around the country.
That was my low point, because there was just such a wonderful resolution for Kel there. Mm. And it never got to be. The man that put in the most effort for this fucking Olympics in this episode got to do, which is brushed off. Yeah, upset me. Anyhow, final conclusions? Any other themes we haven't resolved?
They are finally back together, and Rose brings him a stupid ball-bearing cake. But
yeah, and we find that the doctor eats like a fucking pig. He chews with his mouth open, he speaks with food in his mouth, he speaks with ball-bearings and cake in his mouth, and then all of a sudden we segue after, 48, 50 minutes of utter garbage into... premonition land.
Yeah, but on the subject of being a complete pig... Halfway through the episode, he just dips his fingers in the kitchen into a jar of marmalade and starts slurping at them. So that seems completely intentional, and I don't know why. But yes,
he's an alien.
Land.
All of a sudden, he senses there's a battle brewing somewhere. Bad news is on the way.
Never tear us apart, will they? Never say never, because do you want a bitch, I'm going to dump you. Days are numbers.
You tire me, woman.
What else do we actually find out in this little premonition bit? Is it just that something terrible is going to happen, or is he more specific?
No, he just says a storm is approaching.
A storm is approaching, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay, I mean, I don't know, the premonition sounds stupid. They're just building up the demise of Rose, so it's most emotionally wrought.
Yeah, and then when we, like, seconds later get the here's what you're going to see next week on Doctor Who, we get way too much information.
Way too much information.
Just, it's spoiler city.
Yeah, it's terrible. But then we're now at this point out of the realms of the episode, so I think we should go review time.
Okay, yeah, review time, but we also absolutely need to discuss what happens. What is this drawing bullshit?
I literally don't know. It doesn't have any internal logic.
Don't look at me, I can't provide you any.
The only reference that I can make is that when they're travelling, when these spores are travelling through space, they make up stuff, like, it's their imagination, right?
Mm.
So it's not really, well, we're taking something real and we're putting it in an equally real but very difficult to break out of prison. It's, we're building a bridge between imagination and reality.
We're putting them in a really shitty holodeck.
How's that different from two bits of matter?
Oh, like one is purely theoretical, the other one is actually practical.
But something can't be purely theoretical if it then houses something that's...
But that's the thing. Like, so when they're traveling through space, it goes the other way. They have their imagination. I.e., it's just theory. It doesn't exist. But because they imagine it, they use their powers to turn it into a temporary reality to play in. And then they undo it and they float on through space. In this case, he does it the other way around. He takes objects, or people rather, from the real world and he transposes them into his fictional playground.
Right.
Why does he need a girl to draw everything? Why actually have a drawing? Because while they are flowers floating through space, they don't have children with pencils and paper at their disposal. They just imagine stuff. They use their power to do that.
He or she needed a vessel, presumably, to keep them warmed and nurtured with love.
Okay. Still doesn't explain the drawings.
Couldn't do. But whilst you're inhabited, while you're in that symbiotic moment, I guess it's just one manifest, one expression. Chloe Webber was drawing when she was inhabited, so maybe that was just a...
She's a demiurge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a word I learned yesterday.
You get to use it already.
Yeah.
You must learn that word, because I don't know what the fuck...
I don't know, I have no concept.
From Platonic philosophy,
This is embarrassing.
I think it literally means the builder or the creator, something to that effect. But it's basically, it is that entity that bridges the world of ideas, not theory or imagination, but the world of ideas. You know, Plato was talking about, like, ideas and actual reality. Yeah. And that's the bridge. So she is a demiurge.
Can I just say... Okay, that makes sense.
Sorry to Professor Roger Crisp, my philosophy tutor at Oxford. Sorry for forgetting everything.
And thank you, Laura, for teaching me the word demiurge yesterday. either way, I don't see why he needs, or he, it, the spore, needs a drawing.
Well, no, I just think it is just a handy manifestation. The thing that it went into inhabit, was drawing at the time, and that's just the thing they picked.
Okay.
Yeah, it recognises that this is how the child uses imagination to construct imaginary worlds.
So I'm going
to
do it.
Okay, yeah. But would the plan B still be, let's hide some pencils, or would the plan B, or like crayons, or would the plan B be, you know what, I'm just going to use my power at this point?
Well, we don't know how much the Isolis's powers are constrained by the vessel they're contained within.
That is a good point.
It's just that, it's like, all right, I'm here now, this is all I can use.
That is spot on nerd logic. That makes perfect sense.
Nice.
Excelsior! Reviews. I'm going to keep it shorter than my usual reviews. I did like about 2/3 of it, but then, my goodness, did it hit a low. And I am a freelancer now, and so I know exactly what it's like to be incredibly lonely for most of the day. And so I did find myself empathising and thinking, wow, I can see the need for love and human contact and touchy-feely-wheely, but it was all far too much by the end. So I'm going to have to give this a... I'll go with 1.8.
Wow, that's it. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, strong. Yeah. I echo all those sentiments. I mean, there were elements that... It has all the the like constituent parts of a great story. Creepy, you know, antagonist and actually an antagonist that ends up being you know, not quite such the devil that she's made out to be. Some other sort of very complicated feelings around the father and children and the focal point of the Olympics and the tryst between the Doctor and Rose. As all of the things, they just don't marry them up in the right quantities. They over-egg the love portion and the emotion and the wroughtness of it all, and they underplay the complex and the nuance, and they... It's just fucked up. One big plus point is Rose is the actual... Well, see, this is the other thing that upset me, and I didn't really get into it at the time, but Rose is the heroine. She sorts out everything, she figures it out, she sorts out the stuff, and the Doctor gets to carry the fucking torch.
Yeah.
Sucks. This is a piece of symbolism.
It should be Kel first, Rose second, yeah. The Doctor maybe third.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe
at a stretch.
And it's just, yeah. It's
you could have fixed that very easily by just having the Doctor pick up the torch and go like, you know what, Rose or Kel, you deserve to carry this.
Yes, exactly. And then he gets to be the omnipotent savior of humankind that then gets to hand responsibility back to humans. Anyway, fucking bullshit. As a general point, I'm definitely going lower than Drew, but the sentiment's essentially the same. So I reckon 1.6.
Wow. Okay. All right. I will keep mine short and sweet because the two of you have very neatly summarized this. It's a strong Rose episode. She's great in it.
Mm.
It conceptually, I'm on board with this, but I would have been. I think I would have been more on board with this if it hadn't been a kid. Like, if it had been some weird recluse, or as in a grown-up, or if it had been something else, or someone else, it might have been a little bit more interesting. I just have a bias against kids on TV.
Oracle of Delphine.
I was going to say, I want to know, there are so many things that I want to know about. I want to know what the shit this old lady is about. Like, where does she get off? What are these powers about? She's super deductive. Like, she has pretty much the same powers as the Doctor. Mm. In being able to physically sense all these energies in the air. She could have been a sidekick. It would have been awesome.
Yeah, she had to go play bingo.
Kel was great in it. I think I would have liked to have seen more of Kel.
More of Kel.
More scenes, and not just like the two or three almost identical scenes.
His name is definitely Kel, isn't it?
Yes.
I'm just saying Kel because you said it. Yeah, I honestly did not pick it up at all in the episode.
Do you not think that when Rose is going towards the crowd of people and the torch is going by the end of the close, do you not think it would have been better for her and Kel to team up, fox the policeman and steal the torch?
Oh, so much better. Yeah. So much better.
Rather than everything that happened in the episode after that.
Absolutely. Okay, to run it off, don't like the sentimental nonsense. I hate the singing. I hate the whole power of love solving this conundrum. And the ending is utter nonsense.
Utter nonsense.
Because of all the plot holes, for the most part, I'm giving this a 0.8.
Oh, burn!
No, I get that.
Like
that
an Olympic sense. Torch worth of burning.
This was the lowest rated New Who episode.
I see it, but I think that actually... I mean, Fear and actually Love and Monsters, I wonder if anyone's given it the same weight that we have, like, in terms of, like, going through it all. I think just people...
Oh, I don't
like,
think so.
I think people in general are just like, this feels rubbish, so it is rubbish. It's like, no, you can... When you unpick it, I can sit... there's general, like...
Oh, it has so much potential.
I think they get kudos for ambition. I think they do. And some of the things that we've made to realise whilst we're talking...
If this had been a darker story, maybe if this had occurred later on in, like, the Smith era... When we have stuff like the angels or whatever, like when Doctor Who is already allowed to be a little darker, this could have been an awesome one.
Well, I see. I think that it gets some more kudos than I remember it to be for certain motifs that I missed. So the tarmac love, I think, was cool.
Yeah, hilarious.
And there was something else you mentioned earlier. But what I'm saying is that there's general motifs that there was ambition in this writing, and it just didn't come off. So that gets points from me. Ambition, like, rather than entire safety, but they fucked it up. Just fucked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plot holes, not plot holes. Hey.
Sorry, that was very loud. That was a high five.
All right, I think that pretty much covers this episode. Next New Who episode is Army of Ghosts.
Bum, bum, bum.
Next Classic Who episode...
Bing bong, that'll be the moon base.
The next Audio Who adventure is...
We're undone!
And what do I think of it?
Steaming pile of horse shit.
Correct. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been a treat. Thank you so much for listening to us. Here's what you got to do now. You need to follow... Well, I mean, ideally, all three of us, but I'm going to be a gentleman and say, starting with, you got to follow the Druid. The Druid Hammer. The Druid. The Druid Meister.
I am found at Drew Back When, because it sounds like Who Back When.
Fantastic Twitter handle.
You're welcome, listeners' brains.
Okay, my Twitter handle is a lot less on brand, but it's at Nickulele.
That's like ukulele, but with Nick. Follow him.
There are some endorphins there.
And feel free to follow me as well. I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. And Drood. Thank you so much for listening. Catch you in the next episode.
Ciao.
Rock on and shamadama ding dong.
Bye.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's at Who Back When, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When.